Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. This is podcast number 8. Now, with our podcast today, we are going to have Jim DeCanto on. And this is going to be kind of a weird situation because we're actually recording the second half first. We had about an hour-long conversation, and with the conversation, we actually ended up talking more about the actual study he just did. The date of the call was August 29th, and the day before, on August 28th, 2016, he had just completed an experiment on supraglottic airways. With that, I wanted to make sure that we got that out there as quickly as possible. The main reason why you're listening to the second half first is so we can deal just with that. In the future, we'll do the other first half of that phone conversation. Really great conversation. Luckily, we were able to get him on a bit of a short notice. And just in case you don't know who Jim DeCanto is, first off, I'd be very surprised, but it is possible that you haven't heard of him. But you've probably heard of the SALAD approach to airway management. Now, SALAD stands for Suction-Assisted Laryngoscopy Airway Decontamination. And what that means is, to put it quite plainly, you're suctioning the airway in a vomiting or basically a patient with any sort of material in their mouth, such as blood, to clear out and decontaminate the area prior to placing the tube. Now, Jim is very active in this role and teaches this, I do believe, internationally. So what we're going to do is we're going to play that part first. And like I said, we'll come back to the other part here in the future. So we hope you enjoy. All right. Well, I guess we should come to the point that we're here for. You did a very special little study. We kind of beat around the bush. We've talked about it a little bit. But sure. Why don't you tell us about what you did? I guess it was yesterday.
Yeah, we did this yesterday. So this is what I did with these guys. And these guys were great. I had two paramedic trainers. I had a physician who just graduated from anesthesia residency. I had a critical care physician and one of his nurse practitioners. And we all conspired together to do this. And we worked as a team. And what we were able to do with each and every single run of the system was measure the lung contamination volume in the lungs of the mannequin. Okay, we did 10 runs on each laryngeal mask or supraglottic airway. We measured the amount of simulated airway contaminant that came out of the drainage port of the airways that had drainage ports. And what we were finding, I mean, at least this is really a very, very preliminary data, is that the LMA products performed better than I thought they would. The LMA Supreme and LMA Protector were pretty much neck and neck for being the winners to not allow for lung contamination. And interestingly enough, the LMA Unique actually outperformed the laryngeal tube in this test. I'm like, oh my God, how is this possible? How is it possible that an LMA Unique can outperform a vented laryngeal tube? The answer is that in this mannequin system, we know that the TrueCore is anatomically probably the best we have right now. The simulated airway contaminant would come under the mask and then out of the mouth and onto the table. Whereas the laryngeal tube, because it has two balloons, a proximal and a distal, the flow through the drainage port was, I think I had 115 milliliters average out of 300 milliliters come out the drainage port and 145 milliliters go into the lungs with the laryngeal tube. So it was almost 48.5% of airway contaminant in the laryngeal tube test went into the lungs on average over 10 trials. This is a small number set, but it takes time to do these things, so we just did 10 repetitions. Whereas with the LMA Unique, it was 39.8%. Now, I can't say that any of this is statistically significant because I haven't done that kind of an analysis, but I think it's rather interesting. That the big surprises were that that LMA Unique actually did a better job than the laryngeal tube, the Ambu Orogain, the control, which was a face mask over the nose and mouth of the mannequin while we were running the simulator. It did better than the AirQ blocker, and it did better than the iGel. So that is a That's really, really interesting. The take-home message here is that what needs to be done is, obviously, I've got to use this, try this out in other mannequins, number one. Number two, for those of us who have colleagues who have access to these airway training labs with cadavers, if we were to validate this method of testing that I did here with these guys, this could be easily done in cadavers if an effort were made to cannulate the esophagus from below, place fluid traps onto the right and left mainstem bronchi of the cadavers. We could validate in human cadavers the performance of these airways. So you have to realize that what I'm doing here with this study, this very, very basic study, is I'm validating a method of evaluating supraglottic airway design as far as its resilience to aspiration.
Well, and I think that's a very important point, because this is not saying that necessarily at this stage that these LMAs, one's necessarily better than the other, especially since there hasn't been statistical analysis done yet.
Absolutely, yes. If I gave you the information that, say, with one of the airways, and I won't tell you which one, had an average of 237.9 milliliters Ooh. In the lungs with a 300 milliliter run through, and another one had 225. I'm not going to name it. The control, the face mask, had 212. Okay. And that's basically probably because we couldn't get a tight face mask seal with the TrueCore mannequin. It's, you know, they're a little bit wonky, you know, that's not like a, it's not like a Laerdal where you could actually get a face mask seal. The TrueCore mannequin is kind of discontinuous, so you can't get a good face mask seal, which is why it's important we do this in other mannequins. Another airway had 152.7, and then the I did tell you the laryngeal tube had 145.7. The other products were down. The best LMA, I won't tell you which one, it was actually an LMA North America product, was 69.1 milliliters.
Wow.
Compared to the maximum in a different supraglottic airway of 237.9. You don't need to do statistical analysis on that even. You know that one is twice as good as another. You know, and I don't have any business at all shouting out that one LMA is better than another at this point. As a matter of fact, it would be irresponsible of me to say, yeah, you guys should choose an LMA over a laryngeal tube based on this test. That'd be completely irresponsible. But I will say this, that you have to understand that the construction of these devices is such is that if the supraglottic airway does not let the vomit out of the pharynx and out of the corners of the mouth and onto the bed, it's holding it in the patient, and you can't rely on that gastric drainage port to pick up the job. It's just too small. If there's anything plugging the esophagus will simply dilate just a little bit to let the fluid pass. That's the way it is, man. The body is smart. Even though we think we're smart, it's smarter than all of our attempts to change it.
Again, just more words of wisdom right there. That's perfect. Basically, what this is going to next is that, like you said, we need people who have access to cadavers who can run this type of experiment with the proof of concept of what you just did yesterday being one that can actually be done to help measure and figure out on cadavers or even with other mannequin types what will work right. And what will not work.
Yeah.
Have you talked to anyone yet about that, or do you have anyone in mind on cadavers?
There are a few people out there. I'm not going to mention any names right now.
Right.
I'd invite them. Nobody owes me anything. They can call me. They can talk to me. I would give this idea away to anybody who wants to use it. I don't need anything in return for this. You want this. You give me a buzz. You know, email, Twitter, whatever, and I'll give you the protocol, and you go right ahead and you do it.
Which reminds me, this is a great point to point this out, that, you know, this is totalem.org is where the podcast is going to be, but what are your ways that you would like to be contacted?
Well, I think, I think I opened my thing on Twitter so that you can instant message me on Twitter. I'll accept an instant message. That way, I hope that doesn't turn around and bite me. You know, I haven't been getting the solicitations of a commercial nature or otherwise, thank God. But yeah, just use Twitter. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me.
And that is going to be Jay Ducanto.
It's just at Jay Ducanto. I mean, yes. That's my handle, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right, well, that is a great way for people, if anyone's listening and they're interested on using this models or cadavers, give him a holler, let him know. Otherwise, was there anything else in that study that you kind of even again, just not more anecdotal or other stuff you have planned up ahead?
I just have to tell you that if you're going to do this kind of work, one of the things you're going to have to do is calibrate the pump you're using with the hoses you're using to the mannequin to try to get a clinically relevant flow rate. I had goofed around with different hose sizes to throttle down the output of an immersible sump pump. It was flowing with way too much speed. What I found out is when I mixed the artificial airway contaminant, which is vinegar mixed with xanthan gum, 5 milliliters of powder and 1 liter is the mix, the stuff is so thick that the pump was not moving the fluid through that hose. So I had to go back to a different hose, which ended up to actually provide the flow rate that I wanted for the study. So this is you're going to have to really play around with these things until there is no formula for this. But if you do buy an immersible pump, Yen Chow up in Canada, he's at T-Bay guy. He's investigating the use of a pond pump, and so is Tim Leuenberg in Australia. But I'm using these immersible sump pumps, and I go with the weakest one I can get. I bought the 1/10 horsepower pump, not the quarter horsepower or the half horsepower. The flow rates are too high to be relevant for this kind of simulation. You understand what I'm talking about, right, Chip?
Right.
Okay, so if you're going to do this simulation, what you have to realize is that the hardware store bought stuff is going to completely overpower your simulation unless you can either throttle down the output of the pump by reducing the hose size, which then becomes a problem if you thicken the airway contaminant. Yet, because you understand that this is a very, very interesting, you've got to really love goofing around with stuff to do a stellar job at this. And I would like to, of course, with this product coming out with NASCO, to make it a lot easier. They're not going to include any electric pumps in this. It'll be a simple hand pump. It'll be interesting to see how that all turns out. But for research, I think there's, I suppose I can discuss this at a later time. I mean, there's way too many details. I'm sorry, Chip.
No, you're fine. This is all trying to get people information. So this is perfect.
Yeah. So let me just give you a basic build, a little bit of a build idea here. And one of the earliest guys to do this was Brandon Miesmer in Nebraska. I think he's in Nebraska. And Brandon figured this out pretty quickly after I showed him how to do this at SMAC in Chicago, that the easiest way to get things done is to find the PVC tubing in the hardware store that will interface with the esophagus of the mannequin. That's number one. The second thing you do is for $10, you can purchase a small pump driven by an electric drill. And if you do this, electrical safety has to be one of your primary concerns. A cordless drill may be a good idea. If you're using a corded drill, you're going to have to be careful because you're around, liquids. The supply bucket is anything will do with your imagination that the pump can aspirate up and move through the mannequin. The cool thing about using an electric drill with a drill pump is it's inexpensive and it's easy. And you can vary the rate very easily just by squeezing or releasing the trigger of the drill. That was my original model, Just squeeze the trigger, release the trigger of the drill. Speeds up, slows down. If you want more control over the flow rate, you'll have to use a corded drill through a rheostat. And usually it's a table lamp dimmer. That was my original idea. But I've gotten to the point now where I don't use any of that stuff. What I do is I've calibrated the hose that goes to the pump to deliver the relevant flow rate, and I simply use an on and off switch for electrical safety purposes. And I actually have one I bought at the hardware store that is a little wireless keychain thing. You can push the button to turn on the switch, push another button to turn it off.
Well, and I think once again, we almost have to mention don't try this at home, kids, without at least having some basic understanding of electrics and talking to some people like yourself who actually know what the hell they're doing.
The beautiful thing about this is you guys who are in pre-hospital, how many of these guys are actually firefighters? Let me ask you that, Chip.
So, well, I'm a firefighter.
Okay, so I would think that you probably know even better than an anesthesiologist about electrical safety in general, right?
Yes. In fact, okay. We just covered that recently.
Okay, super. You know, I mean, I think that if you're a firefighter, you can figure this out safely.
Well, no, that's a good point. That's a good point. I didn't think about it in that sense.
Yeah.
So is there anything else you wanted to kind of mention?
Let me mention two things about the whole salad thing. And if this is going out there to every trainer in the pre-hospital world who wants to reproduce this for their own department, there's two principal exercises to use with the whole salad system. What you need to know, and this is coming from somebody, I've been through a lot of school, as have you guys, but I mean, obviously becoming an anesthesiologist takes a lot of school. If you're going to teach the whole salad thing with suction and direct laryngoscopy, video laryngoscopy, start simple. The first exercise is called the static exercise. You simply fill the pharynx of the mannequin with the artificial airway contaminant. The student takes the suction in the right hand, laryngoscope in the left. Always lead with the suction. Decontaminate systematically as you're going in. Use the suction to help control the mouth opening and tongue. Get first pass success with laryngoscopy every single practice, every single stroke of practice. Bury the suction into the esophagus to the left of the blade. And then begin again. Start with the static exercise. Then as the student gains understanding of the equipment and how the exercise is done, go to the dynamic exercise where you will deliberately run the pump to move the sac through the mannequin to challenge the student. Do not teach this technique through making the student fail. Make them successful every single time they do it so that when they see this for real life in the field, they're not afraid. They know what they see. There's no hesitation. They know how to fix this problem. They don't skip over any steps. They don't make any mistakes. They move in a step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They skip over no steps. They do it perfect. If you teach with failure, they'll harbor fear in themselves and they'll screw this up. Understand?
Completely. That's something I try and point out a lot with education. So I'm glad you just said that there too.
Yeah. That's my if I have to preach to the planet Earth today, that's all I'm going to say is teaching through failure is ridiculous. And it makes the person harbor fear. We are dealing with human lives. We can't afford to have anything hold us back from doing the best possible job we can for our patients. And if you're harboring fear, you're going to have to find a way of getting rid of it. If you're afraid of the airway because some bad stuff has happened to you, this has to polarize you to practice more and more and more and go to airway courses and iron this into your brain so that when it happens to you, it's not like you're on automatic pilot. It's just that the fear is not there to disrupt you. You have to stop asking yourself, am I good enough? You have to stop asking yourself, am I doing this properly? That's all I can say to you about this, Chip.
No, that's perfect. And when I do train, because I do the firefighter training as well, and when I train with my PA and med students who come through and everything like that, I make sure to emphasize that there's going to be a lot of stress inoculation, and we're going to do it. We're going to start very simple. I'm not going to put much stress on you. I'm going to keep it so that you continue to get it right and that you're going to get it right the first time through and you're going to keep getting it right. And once you're at that level of confidence where we can start tackling harder and harder situations, we're still not going to let you fail, but we're going to make it so that it's more real life, but we're going to do it gradually and effectively, not just throwing you at the deep end and having you fail. And like you said, harboring that fear. Right. Because when it comes down to it and it's real life, you don't want to get that person in a place where they think they failed in simulation, they're going to fail in real life. We want them to be as successful as possible.
That's exactly right. And in addition to that, if you encounter a clinical situation and you've got this, if you've got something like fear holding you back, I think probably this contributes to job dissatisfaction. And quite literally, you might ask yourself, why in God's name did I go through all this to become, to do this job that I hate now? So,
right.
You know, so you essentially what you're doing is you're possibly creating a situation where you experience some job satisfaction, and you might want to do it a whole lot longer than some people. I don't know what your rate of burnout is in pre-hospital, but I know it's not zero.
Yeah. When it comes to the pre-hospital side, I feel like burnout's very high. In my work in the ED, you know, the as PAs, we get a lot of people who come and go, but at the same time, people stay in the profession. It's just they may change their setting, but it is, and I think stressors is one of the big sides of what you see and what you manage in your training, and I feel like that's sometimes one of the things that's lacking. What we try and push forward is, I know that's one of the big things I'm a proponent of, is let's get more training out there and let's get people comfortable. We don't want people to lose interest or be afraid that they can't do something just because they don't have the confidence. They should have the confidence. They should have the training.
Most certainly. So if I'm supervising an individual like you, you're what I would call a physician extender, right? You're a PA.
Correct.
Okay. I'm supervising a physician extender. If the physician extender is doing a procedure, the procedure has hit a wall for some reason, and the physician extender is doing the job perfectly, they're not doing anything wrong, there's no reason for me to take that procedure away from that person unless I think that they're missing something or they can't get it to work. I had a very similar situation several months ago with a colleague, another anesthesiologist, who was doing a bronchoscopy through a tracheal tube through a supraglottic airway in a case with subglottic stenosis. And the anesthesiologist was doing the bronchoscopy perfectly. She couldn't find the trachea because there was a big wad of tissue in the way of the from going from the thyroid cartilage past the cricoid ring and down into the trachea. There's no reason for me to say I can do this bronchoscopy better than you. If you're doing your job, you're doing your job. It gives me the space to take a step back and look at the problem and find a solution. And we did find a solution. And the solution was not for me to take the bronchoscope away from my colleague, whom I do have more experience than that colleague, but the colleague is doing it fine. The procedures don't flow well, not because the person doesn't have the ability or the confidence or whatever. It's because they don't always work, you know? So as a physician who supervises extenders, I know that if they can't get it, dollars to donuts, I can't get it either. And we have to use another way of doing it.
Thank you for saying that. That is huge. I feel like that could be its own recording right there. But no, it's a good point, because who you are, sometimes you reach those situations, you just can't get out of them, and vice versa. Sometimes there's times when,
yep,
I know there are situations where I'm like, I do not have the training in this. I need the person more experienced, and I may be right there with you, hoping you can kind of guide me through or show me. But that's the only way knowledge ever passes on. You have to have the people who have the knowledge, disseminate the knowledge to the next person. And sometimes that's by watching, sometimes that's by assisting, and sometimes it's just doing it very closely monitored, like what you were just talking about. All right, and that is where our conversation ended with Jim DeCanto, at least online, on our Skype phone call. But I did have to mention real quick that while we were off air, we were talking about some of the other parts of what he's been doing. There's actually a really cool article he sent me. The article is actually from the Journal of Resuscitation, I believe it is, and it's Mechanical Ventilation and Resuscitation Underwater, Exploring One of the Last Undiscovered Environments, a Pilot Study. And Jim DeCanto's lead author is published online June 4th, 2015. I'll try and get it linked up with our website. It's just one of the random things he's done. It's actually really interesting to read, but he basically shows that you can do full resuscitation underwater. And it's just an interesting proof of concept kind of pilot study. So he's a really interesting guy, really worth listening to him. Hopefully we can get him on the show again in the future. Otherwise, like I said, our podcast, that audio ended up turning out pretty well. There were a few points where there was a bit of an echo. If you hear that after I try and doctor this up, I'm sorry. I really try and cut it down as much as possible. Otherwise, like I said, we're going to be around here pretty soon, and you're going to hear from us more. Stick Stay tuned with us every week, as we should be coming out with new content every single week. But until next time, we remind you to provide total care everywhere.